Hi. We're on with Conundrum with Cougar and Flatter, and I played that song because I thought it was kind of an antithesis to what we're going to talk about today, in that how do all these cultures have the same thing going on at the same time without talking to each other?
I thought it was so funny just that, because I got 3 or 4 songs playing at the
same
time.
Yeah, that was weird.
Like, they all happened at the same moment in time, all together, which really well links with the show today. But
yeah.
I just thought it was hilarious. I had to refresh. And
yeah.
I got just the one tune, which is the Genesis one. I don't know what was playing earlier, but it seemed to be several. Anyway, Julie.
Yes, Mark.
Should we talk about the weird things of the week in the Worldwide Weird News section?
Yeah, I think maybe we should.
However, before that, I'd just like to ask you, please do explain what you meant just before the show about a loaded cauliflower. I know the country is in a bit of bother at the moment, but is that a Second Amendment
no,
thing?
No, I was looking through on Facebook, and I was talking about something, and this recipe for loaded cauliflower came up in front of me.
Like,
and
loaded potatoes or loaded.
Oh my gosh, it looked
chilies.
So good. It had cheese and bacon and garlic and onion, chive, I mean. Oh, it looked like, oh, I could die for something like that.
So you didn't fit a magazine to it? It didn't have a bore, a rounded bore and like a shotgun type shape?
No.
All right.
No, it wasn't loaded that way.
Okay, these are my top 5 worldwide weird news stories for this week. Now, first of all, locals in India have become convinced that a new railway track has some supernatural links, as well as kinks. The new track, set to link up Karachi to Hyderabad, which I think is what they said in the report on the video, apparently severely bent itself out of shape over the course of just one day, leading the locals to their thoughts. The local villagers think that there are supernatural powers at work, as well as the railwaymen. The actual reasoning is more likely to be the method of construction of the railway as one continuous rail. Without spacings in between track metal lengths, a hot day can expand the metal and cause such buckling. The video, linked over at our WordPress page, shows the severity of the buckling, which extends to about 50 metres, which is quite amazing for just one day.
In one day,
50 metres worth of track is really kinked out of
just
shape.
Kinked out.
It's not just like a little wobble either. It's like one track is touching the other.
Does it have anything to do with, like, maybe, underground, what do you call that, volcanic activity or anything
like that?
There
could be,
but
it's most likely it was just a really hot day in India and the track expanded.
Wow.
And there are plenty of pictures online. If you look for warp track in the sun, you can see some of
it. We get pretty hot temperatures here.
Yeah, but the way of doing it properly is to put spacers in between the tracks.
Oh,
you have
sure.
like a little sort of spacing bit. It
sure.
won't take much weight of the train itself.
Yeah, it's about 2 inches.
Yeah, so
yeah.
They do it on bridges as well and what have you to allow for the expansion in hot weather.
Yeah.
But, of course, your Indian general townspeople, village people, don't know any of this, and they've just seen these things bending all out of shape on their own, and what could cause it? You can kind of see the logic on it.
Yeah.
All right, story number 2. A Pennsylvania man recovering from surgery has won $7 million with a lottery ticket that was tucked into his get-well card.
Oh, my gosh.
There's a drop of luck, eh?
That is wonderful.
Joseph Amarese got the ticket from his father, who lives in Rockland County, New York. Amarese had just undergone hernia surgery. A few scratches later, not of himself, I guess, and the $7 million golden ticket was there. I scratched the ticket, and it was a good thing I was already sitting down because I was shocked, he said. I was and still am in complete disbelief. I had surgery, so I didn't jump up and down, but in my mind I was jumping up and down, he added. The 46-year-old Verizon employee then called his wife Jody, a social worker. I think he would have called her some other names previous.
Yes.
Apparently she's a social worker, so the story reads.
Darling, or sweetheart, or...
Yes, I wouldn't just ring up and say, hey, social worker.
Yeah.
Anyway, apparently he said, honey, I think we won $7 million. And there was silence on the other end for a long time. She was too stunned to talk. Lottery officials presented Amarese with a ceremonial check at the dollar store in New City, New York, where the ticket was purchased. The new multimillionaire and his wife plan to keep their jobs.
Really?
Why not give other people the chance to work?
Oh, my gosh. Social working is one of the most thankless jobs there is, for
there
one
is that
thing.
Too. Yes.
And
yes, if she's a good worker.
Working for Verizon? I don't know.
Yeah, you can drop that one. But the social worker, I see what you mean by that. It just seems that $7 million, would you keep your job?
Hell no.
It's always an interesting question.
It depends on the job.
Yeah.
I've had jobs. Of all the jobs I've had, I would say working at the nursery.
Uh-huh.
The garden center would be the one job I'd keep.
There's another thing to that too, isn't there? If it's really something that you do enjoy doing,
mm-hmm.
why give it up? Simply because you've got money. You might well
right.
build yourself a big garden center and
yep.
work at it.
Yeah, you know? And make my own garden center
yeah,
and sell plants.
Now, here's a strange story for you. Milton, Massachusetts Police Chief Richard G. Wells Jr. said on Tuesday that homeowner Lendell Williams, his attorney and an electrician were conducting a pre-sale inspection of a house which was recently occupied by renters when they discovered an explosive device wired to one of the home's light switches. We believe the intention was that if someone had flipped the light switch on where it ended, the device would have exploded, Wells said. He said the device had several wires that spread through multiple rooms and were connected to a gallon container of an incendiary substance. It took some work to put it there, he said. A bomb squad was called in from Boston to render the device safe. Wells said police were called to the home last week on a vandalism complaint. Officers arrived to find the drains had been plugged with concrete.
Oh, my gosh.
Did you say that the previous renter might be worth a
bit
of a
talk
to?
I'd say a little vindictive, wouldn't you say?
There's something amiss with that one. But rigging up a light switch to it, oh, man, what?
That's scary.
And a gallon
that's,
full of this stuff.
That's worse than putting the shrimp tails in the curtain rod.
As a revenge.
As a revenge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
That's awful.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I say, you've got the vandalism with the concrete. I mean, the same guy that did that presumably did, I don't know, is that the way they're thinking? But I would say that the previous renter is the guy that should be talked to.
Yeah.
All right, completely different in a sort of related way to do with houses, but this time with bathrooms. It's said that one man's trash is another man's treasure. And now scientists have found that precious metals like gold, silver and platinum can be extracted from sewage to prevent a small fortune being flushed down the toilet.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Although the prospect of digging through human excrement, hunting for the gleam of gold, may seem bizarre, the figures show it could be a surprisingly lucrative enterprise.
Mm.
An 8-year study by the U.S. Geological Survey found that levels of precious metals in feces was comparable with those found in some commercial mines.
Wow. Wow.
I take it they're profitable mines.
You know what just came to my mind? Uh-huh. Do you remember that scene in Jurassic Park where they were trying to find out what was wrong with the Triceratops?
Ah, yeah.
And she puts on that glove up to her shoulder. Yeah. Okay.
In fact, mining all of Britain's excretions could produce waste metals which are worth around £510 million a year. That's half a billion quid.
That's incredible. That is incredible.
Trace amounts of metals are found in cosmetics, shampoos, and even clothes. Some food and drinks also contain flakes of gold or silver. Tiny metal particles can become dislodged from cutlery and from the gold and silver medical diagnostic tools which are used by doctors. Jewelry, which is accidentally flushed down the toilet, also finds its way into the sewage system, as does runoff from local metal industries.
Well, what is that colloidal silver that your brother takes?
Yeah.
That would show up in there.
I imagine so. After your body's flushed it,
yeah.
as it were, and you flushed it.
Is it worth anything?
Well, I guess, tiny little bits, no. But all collected, when you think about the amount of sewage that must go through city supplies and things, you've got to wonder if it's worth collecting.
Hmm.
I like that, kind of
leave it up to somebody else, but I don't know. I'd rather get the $7 million lottery ticket.
Yeah, well, not after hernia operation. You got to weigh these things up. All right, the next story is the most excellent fail of the week.
Okay, epic fail here.
Epic fail moment. State police in Pennsylvania say a trespassing suspect used his own credit card to jimmy open a garage door, then left it behind when the homeowner suddenly appeared and startled him. The important clue helped the police to arrest 41-year-old Brent Henry of East Butler on Saturday in Clay Township. Police told the Butler Eagle that Henry used the car to pick the lock of a friend's mobile home. The homeowner heard a noise which startled the robber, who ran away but left the credit card behind. Henry told them that he planned to take some gasoline for another friend's car. So that's how not to do it. Use your own credit card and leave it behind. And the final story of the week, actually, after all those stories above that are somewhat
haunted here,
we must turn to the most bizarre and tragic of news, that of the crashed Germanwings A320 aircraft that flew into a French mountainside this week. A terrible event, and emerging strange info is not helping the grieving families to deal with the tragedy. Just what went on is being sifted and sorted through, especially now that the cockpit voice recorder has been found. And though damaged, it indicates a really odd set of events, and that's why I've included it in these stories. Audio analysis from the beaten up and damaged boxes has shown that one pilot left the cockpit for a call of nature, returned and not likely to re-enter. He was ignored, and he's heard to bang louder on the door. It seems that when he tried to smash the door down before cockpit instrument there were cockpit instrument warnings and all sorts that are heard for the altitude, and then the plane crashes. The co-pilot is heard breathing normally right up until impact, not heavily or frantically, and he doesn't say a single word in the whole 10 minutes of the gradual descent. So apparently no words or shouts, such as, you know, the damn door switch is shut or whatever. An official Airbus training video shows that the door can be opened from the outside with a special code, so the door had to have been locked from the inside and on purpose. Various reports wondered about a broken windscreen, and that, you know, might depressurise the cabin, but that wasn't heard on the voice recorder. Or, as it gained altitude on takeoff, the angle of attack sensors may have frozen, and the computers decided to lower the nose. That's another thought. The plane was 24 years old, much older than the average age for their service aircraft of 9 years, so that was a valid point about fatigue and stresses. Another point there is that the cabin door will open if there's sudden decompression anyway. It's a very strange case. A lot of strange things have happened, and they seem to be placing things onto the co-pilot by must have done it. He must have had a suicide wish.
Well, Christina Nelson, whom we've had on the show, was saying she's so tired of it being blamed on mental illness.
Yes. This has been raised on this case, too, that he apparently had a bit of a meltdown in 2009, retook his test.
Oh, he did.
All right, yeah. They're trying to link to it as that again, as a depression problem.
Mm-hmm.
No, of course, you know, are the psychological evaluations done on aircraft pilots? Apparently not. Just medical tests. So that might need an evaluation. But
yeah.
As I see, it was something you mentioned. I mean, we were talking about the chances of a pilot going like this. And it's almost the same as having the extra pedals in a car when you're driving, when you're learning to drive.
Yeah.
You know, from the driving
school. Right.
Fit every car with extra pedals just for when you start flailing your arms in the air and going mad while you're driving the car, the other person can put the brakes on.
Right.
It's not really likely, is it? This has got to be a really, really unfortunate set of circumstances for an unfortunate guy.
I think he was suicidal.
And that's what the thinking is.
Yeah.
There is also the situation that Germanwings are to become Eurowings, and there's a Lufthansa deal going on. You've got to be basically laying off a lot of the pilots. This guy only had 630 hours. He was fresh. He's probably one of the first out. May have had a big mortgage. Who knows a lot about the maybes.
All the loans he probably had to repay for training.
His training and that, yeah.
And training.
Who knows? But that's what they're trying to paint the picture of is, and it may, you know, the facts may well be the case that the co-pilot had a few mental problems.
Do we know if he had a family? Was he married and had children?
Don't know.
All we know is
he's 28. He was 28. And he was, you know, quite new at the flying, but he'd got, you know, he'd done a marathon in 2011. He was a fit-looking guy in trim and everything. You'd think he may be looking at the future.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it seems to me that there were suicidal tendencies there that just took over, and the pressure was just too much. The pressure on being a commercial airline pilot is huge.
Oh, yeah, and the tiredness you must have. I mean, they have a lot of good rules about that. Similar to, I believe, truck driving, where you've got to have certain brakes at certain times and everything's logged. You've got to have that with aircraft pilots too.
Yeah.
This whole situation appears to be, you know, like I say, it's very, very odd and very, very weird. And this plane coming down as it did in a slow, gradual glide. The guy doing it must have been looking out the window, perhaps in a trance state while it was all going on as well, because apparently his breathing didn't change.
Sure. Sure, and Chris says if she's apparently up for ridicule, suggesting that mental illness be ruled out first. If you are, then I am, because that was the first thing that came to my mind, that this gentleman had serious mental illness issues, suicidal thoughts.
There's no harm at all, though, is there, in airlines saying, look, fellas, if you've got anything you want to talk about, come to a counsellor. They even had one in Star Trek, not to be glib.
Right.
But they had a counsellor, and you do need someone to talk to occasionally. It's such a high-profile position with your nice, clean shirts and all the rest, and you've got this, you know, image from people that, you know, this really intelligent, well-structured guy, that sometimes you might need a talk with someone, a confidential talk, that wouldn't go any further, and they may help out some people with very stressful thinking.
Yeah, we can't blame this all on low energies going around the planet and things like that. And, I mean, granted, there's some, I don't know, nefarious things going on with the elites and all that kind of stuff.
You don't focus on it,
because
it becomes part of you as well.
Yeah, it doesn't have anything to do, I don't believe, with this particular...
No, signs are looking at a troubled guy. And there is evidence with the black boxes and the voice recorder and things, damaged and everything, though they are. A very, very unfortunate thing. Let's move on now. What
all
is
right.
the subject?
Well, let's give a shout-out to our room here.
Sure.
We've got Kathy Sisson and Echoes, who is me for the purposes of the show. We've got Byte Radio Me, which is Robert. Thank you for coming by. We've got Kathy B., who owns our show and makes it possible for us. We got Curious Times Chris from Canada. We've got Galaxy Guide or Barb from Pennsylvania. We've got Rihanna. Rihanna from
England.
Britannia. Simon Swain, also from Britain. And Slider 2732, who is becoming Americanized. So hello, everybody, and thank you for
What's this
for
becoming Americanized?
Here. Well, you kind of lived here for a while.
I guess.
So.
I want to keep the accent, though.
You know everything. Well, same with me living here in Oklahoma.
I don't want the Oklahoman accent, thank you very much.
Oh, y'all fixing to. No, thank you. All right. Let me find my notes here. Our topic, if you go to our links here.
Yeah, where are those links now?
Those links I've posted several times, well, a couple of times, I'll say already, are at conundrumwithcougar.wordpress.com. And you'll see links for 326 show, 15 show, simultaneous inventions and ages. I just shortened it to that because... That was a lot shorter than how did things happen around the world at the same time. And let's go back to the Stone Age, shall we? Start way back in the beginning and work our way forwards. The Stone Age lasted roughly 3.4 million years.
A long time. It's
a long time, and ended between 6000 BCE and 2000 BCE with the advent of metalworking. Bone tools were used during this period as well, but were rarely preserved in the archaeological record.
There never was a Bone Age.
The Bone Age was with the Stone Age, the Stone Bone Age, the Bone Age. During 2010, fossilized animal bones bearing marks from stone tools were found in the lower Awash Valley in Ethiopia, discovered by an international team led by Shannon McFerrin. At 3.4 million years old, they are the oldest evidence of a stone tool ever found anywhere in the world. So we're looking at... I want to get to this part two also as well. They're finding these things in Ethiopia and Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Now, several years ago, I saw a very interesting, I think it was a National Geographic show about the origins of man and how they started out of Africa.
Yeah.
And everybody says that the cradle of humanity was Sumerian area, around Sumeria, Iraq, Iran, that area. What I think happened is that pre-Homo erectus started in South Africa and were able to do, you know, use stone tools and make stone tools. And they spread, according to this documentary I watched, they spread over a land bridge that went into Australia. And that's why you have the ancient aboriginals in Australia. And then they forked out north towards...
What caused the expansion?
Just needing to move, lack of food, needing to move with the herds.
It wasn't like a hot day, was it? Like they get in India with the railway track?
No.
Got a hot day one day and they all went... Phew.
No. Because some of them stayed there.
But I thought climate might be one thing that might have caused this.
Well,
they're running short of stuff to eat, so they branched out.
Yeah, they ran short of stuff to eat. They followed the herds, like the farmers or the hunters would. They were gatherers, not necessarily farmers, because they didn't farm back then, but they gathered berries, nuts, you know, roots, things to eat, and hunted animals. So they followed the herds, and they branched up into northern Africa, into the Sumerian Valley, the Hindus Valley, the Hittite Valley, up around Syria, Iraq, Iran, Egypt, those areas up around there. And then from there, branched north into West Asia, then east or west into Europe, and then east over into Asia proper, and into East Asia, and across the land bridge into North America.
Well, this is what gets me. Most of us like warm weather. So we're trundling along, we're walking away, and we're looking for new lands and fresh places away from other people, maybe, or to, you know, follow herds of animals and what have you. Once it started getting cold and you got snowed on, do you not think you'd turn around and go back?
Well, they might have found the eating good. You know, they probably had mammoths.
So one mammoth was the same as four tigers, and you
wouldn't
mind if you got eaten by them,
either. Right. And what was interesting, a point they brought out, and I'm not trying to be racial or anything here, but the point they brought out is that the farther north you went, the more furs you covered your skin with, the less the sun affected your skin, the lighter your skin is.
Yeah, but how fast does that happen?
Over, 3.4 million years, I would imagine.
Okay.
You know? But that was another thing the show pointed out.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was very interesting.
I've always found it interesting. Well, this is the point for trade routes, right? There's a problem with trade routes, in a way. Even though it's gaining, you know, popular thinking that the Chinese came over to America's, you know, thousands of years ago kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You look at generally the populace of various places, like your Chinese, your Europeans, your Native Americans, your whatever, very different looking people. So really, was there that much traveling that actually did happen? Was it small amounts of people? Because obviously, you know, everyone didn't intermingle all over the place all at the same time.
Right.
Or people would look very similar.
I think there were just a small amount of intrepid adventurers who went, beyond, did the Thorth Heyerdahl.
Yeah.
In
Kon-Tiki.
And
the reed boats. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And expanded. Well, you just look at like Hawaii, Easter Island, some of those places that are thousands of miles away from other islands out in the middle of the ocean, and yet they were populated by indigenous people.
I mean, is this really the point of the show, in a way, that all of this was going on that really science hasn't looked at properly for those trade routes?
I don't see as much evidence for people saying that, yes, there were trade routes going on, as there are still naysayers who say, no, that couldn't possibly be, even though there's evidence that there is. If we take a look at the Bronze Age, the Bronze Age in the ancient Near East began with the rise of the Sumer in the 4th millennium B.C., so we're looking at 4,000 years B.C.
Yeah.
The classic Bronze Age lasted from 3300 BC to 1200 BC. The many areas included in the Bronze Age include, now listen to this, Sumeria, Mesopotamia, the Iranian Plateau, Anatolia, which is the Hittite Empire, Levant, which included the area of Syria, ancient Egypt, Central and East Asia, China, Korea, South Asia, Southeast Asia, Europe, Aegean, Central Europe, South Europe, West Europe, including Britain, Atlantean, and Ireland, North Europe, Caucasus, Pontic Caspian Steppe, and the Americas.
Well, you know what I'm thinking straight away? That guy that came up with bronze missed out on a really good patent opportunity, didn't he? Can you imagine a patent on
oh,
that?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, I just created bronze.
Oh,
work.
Yeah.
Can we license it, please?
Well, I'm going to talk about Scott Walter now.
Oh, the
He's
yeah.
the Unearthing America, and he's become a controversial figure for some reason. So I was looking through how some claim that he doesn't have geography
credentials, yeah.
And that he wrote a book with a noted pedophile, and I don't understand
yeah,
all that.
Not,
that
the,
just,
not the message,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Down the information based on outside source.
But he's talking about how much copper was taken from northern Michigan, the upper Michigan Peninsula.
Okay.
And he believed the Phoenicians, which
were... the guy with the blinds? The people with the blinds?
The Phoenician blinds?
Uh-huh.
No.
Oh.
Nice try. came to upper Michigan, the peninsula in upper Michigan, and mined out billions of tons of copper to make bronze over in the
Near
East.
Tells you they had a plan for it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
They're doing it in such a big operation.
Yeah. So, and that tells you that they were making trade routes.
Well, can we let a little rewind here, just a moment, even though
sure.
we are back at the start in a way.
Sure.
Fire and the wheel. How did, I mean, fire was presumably found and, you know, tailored to people's uses for making fires to keep warm and what have you. And did it literally spread like wildfire, the
like
knowledge
wildfire.
That, hey, we can do this too? Because,
you know, you have to think that the first fire was started by a lightning bolt.
Mm. And someone kept it going.
And someone kept it going. And this is where the whole conundrum of baking and cooking
yes.
get to me, is how did people know that if you roast meat,
yeah.
it tastes better?
How many people, I mean, oh, yeah, you read, don't you? Just as an aside, you read on things about the origins of certain recipes, and it's like, never use it with basil, otherwise you will get a stomach cramp and
right.
die in 14 days. How do they know?
Right.
What happened
Who
to
is
the
first
to
one to
out?
Eat
yeah.
sumac to know that it's poison, you know?
Isn't it? Unlike chili beans, you don't eat them raw. You got to cook them thoroughly.
Right.
Otherwise, you die.
Yeah.
Poor bloke, woman, whoever that found that out.
Yeah. That's the whole thing with fire that gets me.
Mm.
And
but yes, the spread of fire. If it was all
around
the world,
fire,
as it were. How did that knowledge get?
It would have to. It would have to be everybody experiencing fire through lightning. I would think.
Do you think
unless,
like a simultaneous sort of light switch went on? Yeah, we can use that.
I think unless, like, neighboring tribes shared
yeah.
with each other and it eventually spread like that. But, and what was the other one? A fire and, well,
wheel.
Oh, the wheel.
Hmm. That seems like a technical development that might have been a bit difficult to understand.
What are so interesting about wheels is that they used round discs for the longest time, and never used them for transportation. They used them for mill work. They used them for grinding.
Oh, flour and stuff.
Yeah. And it
never
took
turned them 90 degrees and put an axle through the middle.
Never took it, yeah.
Yeah, but think about it. People in the future might say about us, oh, they use cell phones all that time and never thought to turn them 90 degrees and put an axle through them.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
But then you have to look at the marks of the cart tracks in Malta.
Oh, and the new ones in Turkey?
Yeah, tell us about that.
Oh, I don't know. I was just reading something online that they found these tracks. They're equally spaced, going straight through, you know, fields and what have you, not changing course or anything for hills. Just go straight through, apparently. And the thing was, there's one area that is cut out from some rock at either side of the tracks, and it's got marks in the sides of the rock. Where it looks like, you think about, you've got wheels and you've got a slightly wider platform, and that platform has scraped down the sides. That's for all the world what it looks like. Uh-huh. Some people are trying to say that it's a natural formation, the way that the rock has formed and what have you. But they're trying to say, what was it, 3.8 million years old or something? Because that's the age of the rock. Well, that doesn't mean that's the age of the track. But they're trying to say that they went through mud, and then that mud made itself into
hardened.
Rock.
Yeah.
Know, hardened millions of years later.
Uh-huh.
But I was thinking, I was telling you, what about, like, the people walking with it? Where are their tracks?
Where are their footprints?
Where are their size 9s and the whole
yeah.
stuff, too? There isn't. There's just the track.
Well, it might be have to do with the weight of the person. Maybe the person...
Oh, the weight of the cart, yeah.
Yeah, the cart was way more than made more of an impression than whatever was pulling it. Mm.
But those kind of tracks, like in Malta
yeah.
as well, are very, very interesting. What happened?
Well, like the ones down in Texas, in the riverbed,
uh-huh.
where there's dinosaur tracks right next to human footprints, and they actually had to dig up...
Provable?
Well, they had to remove a limestone layer to get down to more, so it was actually hidden underneath a limestone layer that they were both together.
So you're trying to tell me there were dinosaur tracks and human tracks now verified as fact?
Apparently side by side.
Yeah, but I don't want apparently, I want proven.
Well, kiss my...
Yeah, all right then.
All right. Anyway, so bronze was all over the world from 3300 BC to 1200 BC. Again, back in the times when they're saying no, they weren't communicating, because that's
right.
when during the time of the pyramids as well, when they're saying that Egypt had its pyramid built 4,000 years ago or
much older myself.
6,000 years ago, and the South American pyramids are 4,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where did the South American people get ideas for pyramids? I'm going to talk about pyramids later. Let's go on here. Bronze Age came later to Africa at 1100 BC and Japan at 300 BC. So that kind of wraps up the Bronze Age. Excuse me.
Right, here's another little aspect, though. Not to labor a point, but you've got Bronze Age, you've got Stone Age. Did they mix the stone with the bronze?
Yes. They overlapped each other.
I was going to say, they didn't just like down tools. Oh, that's no good anymore.
No.
We've got this stuff.
Because Stone Age ended between 6,000 BC and 2,000 BC, and you've got the Bronze Age starting at 3,300 BC.
Uh-huh.
So they did overlap. It's not like...
I always wondered.
Up and
yeah.
quit. And I would imagine it's like, we have United States and Papua New Guinea, where they have a very different civilization, not as advanced with tool making and
although
and
you may
whatnot.
Say the Papua New Guineans are more advanced mentally for the way they're
could
at peace
be.
With the way that they live
yep.
and at harmony with nature and all
yep.
the rest. You could argue both ways.
But I'm just saying that you wouldn't find in the outbacks of Papua New Guinea somebody with a cell phone.
No.
So it might end up like that, like the difference between some people
yeah.
having Stone
yeah,
Age and some
they
having
are today.
Bronze Age.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah. So the Iron Age is an archaeological term that indicates the conditions as to civilization and culture of a people using iron as a material for their cutting tools and weapons. In historical archaeology, the ancient literature of the Iron Age includes the earliest texts preserved in manuscript tradition. Sanskrit and Chinese literature flourished in the Iron Age. Other texts include the Avestan Gathas, the Indian Vedas, and the oldest parts of the Hebrew Bible.
The Darth Vedas.
The Darth Vedas, yes. The principal feature that distinguishes the Iron Age from the preceding ages is the introduction of alphabetic characters and the consequent
oh, yeah.
development of written language, which enabled literature and historical record. The Iron Age lasted from about 1200 BC to 700 BC. The beginning of the Iron Age in Europe and adjacent areas is characterized by certain forms of implements, weapons, personal ornaments, and pottery, also by systems of decorative design, which are altogether different from those of the preceding age of bronze.
Hmm. Well, that just reminds me of the Stone Age thing again, though. When we were talking the other day, weren't we, about the day the guy must have realized, one guy must have realized that when you're cutting your flint thing, you're cutting your tool out of stone.
You're right.
To put a notch either side near the bottom of it so you could attach your rope better to the actual piece of stone. And I just thought, imagine sitting there realizing that if you carve that little notch, your rope goes round better and it holds onto better for a spear type of object. How about he jumped up and down?
And you know, in a way, I think that people in the Stone Age were more intelligent than we are in a way.
Mm-hmm. In a, yeah, practical intelligence.
Yes, in a way of design and of finding uses for what they had on hand.
Certainly so, and that would cross over then to the Bronze Age, to the Iron Age, those that kind of thinking pattern.
Of course, I can't really say that to you because of the inventions you make with what we have on hand.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, but, it's the same kind of thing. Use what you've got. Recycle things.
Yeah.
You know, desolder components of circuit boards on my little way of doing things.
You find something you need to do and you find a way to do it.
And I think that's just been a human trait all the way through.
Yeah.
Tool usage.
Yeah.
Practicalities.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just find that the artistry in the stone arrowheads, the flints, and the hide scrapers and things like that. It's artistic.
It's just incredible.
And they used to have to practice for years to be able to make a perfect flint or a perfect arrowhead before they were able to hunt.
And, of course, they had to be able to hunt, otherwise they wouldn't be around.
Right.
So they had to do it.
Yeah.
That's another side to this, having to do something, not just being a convenience. That drives innovation as well. I mean, some of the biggest stuff of World War II, jet engines and what have you, came from wartime.
Exactly.
You know, so many things came from wartime. So you've got to think also, these guys were probably, you know, scrapping around with the neighbours as well, and all sorts of things were being invented because they had to be. Now, maybe that links in with the way that things spread around the world too. It became easier to do something. A convenience side may have happened through these base eras.
Yeah. Let's go, the 40,000-year-old Sphinx.
All right.
Isn't that interesting? I just see that up with my pyramids thing. And it's not the Sphinx that we know. It's that little statue of the Sphinx.
Oh, is that a German one?
Lion Man, dug out in Germany, yeah. And I don't think I put this one out as a link because I wasn't thinking. But but it's interesting to know that they're 40,000 years old. Somebody was using artistry to create an image of a man lion. And you have other temples, like in the Hindu temples, you have sphinxes on those. You've got a Sumerian hybrid sphinx.
I know, I never really.
Celtic sphinxes.
Yeah. It's a kind of another area and another topic for another day, but the way that they used to anthropomorphize, used to stick animal head on a guy's body and things, all of that stuff is very strange.
Uh-huh.
Why would you do such a thing?
Say, you know what? This came up. This is ATS. I wonder if somehow when I bookmarked that other page that you sent me that it ended up.
Oh, it went over to there.
Yeah.
All right.
But it's interesting to me that over 40,000 years ago that they had the tools and the craftsmanship to be making, like I say. And you look at Göbekli Tepe, like you say.
In Greece.
Yeah.
No, sorry, that's in Turkey, isn't it?
It's in Turkey, but in Greece there's also... that's in Malta again. I was thinking of those.
Oh, the tracks. Okay.
The tracks, and there's a...
All right, so what do we know that actually moved around the world in those time periods?
Well, I'm getting to the pyramids, and I want to get up here.
Have you got scrolling troubles?
Yep. Here we go. There are pyramids around, major pyramids around the ancient world. There's the Great Pyramid of Giza, of course, we know. All three of them, actually, are considered great pyramids.
Yeah.
The Nubian pyramids in the region of the Nile Valley known as Nubia, and thus the pyramids found in that area are Nubian pyramids. The emperors of ancient Kushite reign constructed these structures. There are around 255 pyramids constructed eventually in the three areas of Nubia.
They know the practice ones, the so-called.
No, actually, if you go to the site and you look at these things, I'm on Pyramids of the Ancient World, Amusing Planet. Look at how well-defined these pyramids are.
Oh, so properly built, as it were, not falling apart.
Yeah, they aren't huge, but they're just pristine.
Uh-huh.
Behind them, some of the other 255 pyramids are eroding, but there's some here in the foreground that are just
spot on. I think they're
allowed
if they're that old, you know.
Uh-huh.
Look at some houses just 100 years old.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, right, I'm on that page now. Okay.
Okay, did you roll down and see those?
Yes. They look fake. They look like they were made last week.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's see, then we got the Pyramid of Helinicon.
Okay.
Pyramid of Helinicon is a leftover of mysterious pyramids of Helinica, which is an ancient city in Greece. This structure is said to be the military base at the time. Other theory tells that this pyramid was built as a memorial for martyrs of the battle. This is made up of pure rock, which does not compromise polishing. These rocks are from the Mycenaean era, 1600 BC to 1000 BC. The pyramid served as a place of burial and was first excavated by Germans and Americans. Now, that one's a real wreck.
Mm-hmm.
That one hardly looks like it can stand up anymore.
These are fascinating pictures over
at
AmusingPlanet.com.
Pyramids of Guimar. Pyramids of Guimar are six structures located in the Chacona district of Guimar in the Canary Islands. Isn't that interesting?
Oh, I never knew about these either.
No. These structures are rectangular and terraced in shape and are made up of lava stone without taking the use of mortar. There are nine pyramids in Guimar, among which only six maintained to survive. The archaeologists believe that the construction of the terraces and these structures is the result of practice of native rural population of primeval period. These people created these edifices while clearing the stones of cultivable land.
Yeah.
They can cultivate it.
Uh-huh.
And piled the stones in the shape of the terraces. So they kind of made them haphazardly as a...
Yeah, but this is a good argument for pyramids and the way that this seems to go around the world, is that if you stack a pile of rocks, you're looking at a basic pyramid.
Yeah.
And is that simply what they did and refined that?
Yeah.
It's a natural shape. Is that a link? Is that the actual link for pyramids popping up at seemingly the same point in history? That it's a natural shape?
Yeah. I don't know. What's interesting is if you look at the bottom picture of those sets of pyramids, they got steps on them going up to the third tier.
Hmm.
You see that there?
Where are you? Halfway down the page?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, okay.
Almost exactly halfway, if you look into the bar thing on the side.
All right. Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, there. The Great Pyramid of Cholula. The Great Pyramid of Cholula is also known as... sure.
Tlaxcalpetli. Easy to say when you've been drinking.
The Great Pyramid of Cholula, which refers to an artificial mountain, this thing is impressive. It is situated in the Cholula of Mexico. This edifice is a temple structure that is traditionally believed to be dedicated to Quetzalcoatl God. Okay, whoever the Quetzalcoatl God is, that's who this...
Quetzalcoatl is the serpent guy.
Yeah.
I would like to interject here. People should look at Brian Forster's latest upload on YouTube.
Okay.
He shows this area.
Okay.
And he shows, and he seems to say, he suggests that the Aztec people, the Incas, sorry, walked in on something that was already there.
Exactly.
Because there's a big, big difference in the way that things are constructed.
Yeah.
In the Inca way than there is on the original methods of how these things were created.
Wasn't it when Cortez or whoever the other guy was that came to conquer
Montezuma
came and he said, did you guys build this? And they laughed and said, no, this was here when we came here.
Because that kind of links with those H-shaped blocks over at wherever it is, Pinkapunku.
There's a slight influence of Gulf Coast in the construction of this pyramid and is closely linked to the architectural style of Teotihuacan. In the pre-Hispanic times, this pyramid was an imperative mythical and religious center.
Either which way you look at it, the thing's massive.
Look at the people on there. They're just ants.
No, you're looking at ants.
Yeah.
No, but it is. It's a hugely impressive structure.
Yeah. Why don't we take a break, and then we can get back to the Pyramid of the Sun and some of the other interesting pyramids that we have, because we're going to end with pyramids of the United States.
In this section.
In North America. All righty. Let me get over to our studio, and let's get a neat song. A neat song. Oh, I haven't played this for a while. Janis Joplin, Me and Bobby McGee.
Oh, yeah.
How's that sound to you? 4 minutes and 28 seconds. We'll see ya.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, when I was feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained and rode us all the way into New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. Windshield wipers slapping time, I was holding Bobby's hand in mine. We sang every song that Javi knew. Another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing, I mean nothing, honey, if it ain't free. Yeah, feeling good was easy long when he sang a blues. You know, feeling good was good enough for me. Good enough for me and my Bobby, yeah.
rocks. I don't care what you say.
That's another one of those tunes a bit like Hey Jude by the Beatles, isn't it? That you could imagine going on and on and on.
On and on, yeah. Yeah, I think LSD, she was into her doobies. She was into a few good things, a few bad things, a lot of bad things, and her whiskey.
Really?
Whiskey was a big...
Speaking of which, we got a cat here that's coughing. She got that flu or something.
Oh, no, our poor baby.
Well, she's singing along with Janis Joplin, I don't
know.
Yeah,
poor kitty. All right, let's go to the Pyramid of the Sun.
All
right. It's one of the largest construction in Mesoamerica and is the largest in Teotihuacan. How come I can say that so easily? The pyramid is a fraction of a large complex situated in the heart of a city. It is positioned along the Avenue of the Dead, right in the middle of Cludagla, in the Pyramid of the Moon. It is in the shadow of the splendid Cerro Gordo Mountain. The orientation of this pyramid marks an archaeological significance. It is oriented a bit towards northeast of the horizontal point related to the setting of the sun. It's believed there is a temple at the top of the pyramid.
Yeah, right, an ice cream stand. Why do they always have to say there's a temple?
Temple. Yeah. It all has
get
to
your
do,
ices now, get your ices.
It all has to do with religion, doesn't it?
Apparently so.
Now, this is one I didn't know about and was interesting. If you look at the second picture of it, is it's situated right in front of a fake castle.
Oh, really?
Yes, it's the Pyramid of Cestius. It is an ancient pyramid of Rome.
That's gaudy.
Yeah, this structure is positioned near the Protestant cemetery in San Paolo. Research shows that this pyramid was built in the 18 BC to 12 BC. It was a tomb of Gallus Cestius, who was a member of the Sempervirri Euplonium, one of the four great spiritual corporations in Rome. This edifice is included in the fortifications of the city, hence it is among the best preserved and ancient constructions found in Rome.
I've never seen that in Rome.
There are different historical inscriptions found on this structure. Now, how far in Rome did you get, though?
Well, Colosseum.
The Colosseum and that statue.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, went to the thingy, went to the Pope's house.
Oh, you went to the Vatican?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool.
And that fountain, the very famous one that I've now forgotten the name of.
Yeah.
I forgot what it's called now.
With all the horses and the fish.
Oh,
and
absolutely fantastic. Just to say, as you walk through the streets, you know, you've got these standard houses in these thin streets, and you turn a corner, and bang, there's this great big, monstrous, wonderful fountain in full working order with all the great carvings.
Now, these pyramids found in South India are incredible.
Trevi Fountain. Anyway, carry on.
Trevi Fountain, yes. They're incredible for the decoration. It just blows my mind at the workmanship that must have gone into these. The Srirangam Temple of India. There are pyramids found in South India that are used as pilgrimage sites today. One such example is Srirangam Temple, dedicated to Ranganatha deity. You know, I used to have to say that when I was in college.
What, Ranganatha?
Yeah, Ranganatha, and now I'm having trouble with it. And the largest Hindu temple in India is located in Tiruchirappalli district of Tamil Nadu. This temple has 21 gopurams, tower doorways. These gopurams are the street pyramid structures built in the ancient era. You want to say something?
I was just going to say, so what you're looking at here is a heck of a lot of different designs of pyramid, but they're all pyramid structures.
Right.
And some of these are related historically in the timeline of when huge pyramid structures were being formed. But these particular ones, those Indian ones, they're just ridiculously good.
Aren't they?
And very well kept as well, is the other point.
They're phenomenal.
Yeah.
Now, what doesn't say here is when these were built, which I would like to know.
Yeah.
You think of, what is that called? Angkor Wat.
Mm-hmm.
And that was built in ancient times.
What about the things like the Bosnian pyramids? How old are they? If they are.
The Bosnian pyramids are 4,000 to 6,000 years old.
Do you think there was actually a link all around the world at the same time? Or do you think it was this simple pile of rocks up kind of making and building?
I don't think it's a pile of rocks. If you look at the structures of these pyramids, except for those ones that we did say were just farmers piling up rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Except for that.
But do you think it was like a global movement of, hey, oh, this is how to build something impressive?
I think it took a couple thousand years, but I think eventually everybody was doing the same thing at the same time. You know, you can't say that the pyramids in South America were done exactly the same time the pyramids of Egypt were.
Mm-hmm.
But in that time period, a gap of 2,000 years wouldn't be terribly...
There's another funny way to look at this, too. Maybe they all at the same time decided to build very slim but very, very tall structures. And, of course, they've fallen over. And they're not there anymore.
Well, you look at the...
So we're left with the pyramids.
The ziggurats in Iran and Iraq. They consider those some type of pyramid, but not a real pyramid. And those are built... Geez. Well, back in biblical times, in First Testament times, so those would be 4,000 to 6,000 years old.
Do you think it was a shift in consciousness of everybody on the planet at that particular time point?
See, that's one thing I think. I think there was a super consciousness going on where, and David Wilcock talks about this, where there's an idea cloud, if you want to think of it that way.
Cloud storage for the internet now.
Where people get these ideas subconsciously, superconsciously.
And uploaded to the Akashic Records, as it were.
Yes. That's what the Akashic Records would be, this superconsciousness.
Borg mentality, in a way.
That's a scary way to put it, but you could think of it that way.
That could be the way that genetics have changed throughout whole species as well.
Yeah.
Because I always found it odd. You know, this bit about, well, you know, it's into creation and what have you, but how everything can change of a species, how they develop a certain wing structure or way that they smell or how many toes they got on the feet, this kind of stuff, or foot shape or whatever.
Right, yeah.
You know, do a load of them all develop this in one go?
Here's one. I'm going to another... site here. I'm going to the Living Moon site on our
list.
The first couple ones, the Pyramid of Cestius and the Pyramids of Giza, that we've talked about already.
Yeah.
But next is the Pyramid of Montevecchia. Satellite images like the pictures below are helpful in pointing out the location of pyramids in Montevecchia. Mapping software is used to enhance the details shown in satellite images and photography. Plenty of facility maintenance software can be utilized as a support system for these same satellites, ensuring the best quality pictures. So this site doesn't really tell you much about the pyramids, but it does show mapping of them. It says, in the early 2003, the pyramids of Montevecchia, Old Mountain in English, only about 30 miles from the Italian city of Milan, were discovered with the use of satellite and aerial imagery.
And instantly you can see, the, as it looks like, the link to the pyramids in Egypt with that shape.
Yeah. Well, look at the layout you're talking about.
Yeah.
At the bottom picture of those three.
Yeah, the Orion's Belt type.
Exactly. Isn't that interesting?
Mm.
Let's see, where was I here?
Sorry.
These pyramids are completely covered by earth and vegetation and now appear to be natural hills, but the possibility of something more was enough for the Czech WM magazine and its editor-in-chief, Georg Warnior, to visit the area in effort to locate the survey and survey the site. The team arrived on the 8th of May, 2003. Finding the location of the pyramids from the ground proved to be more difficult than imagined, the team becoming impressed with the driving abilities required to negotiate their way towards the hills. After 2 days, they succeeded in locating the pyramids and began carrying out an initial survey. The team's conclusions appeared in the June 2003 issue of WM. Now, I don't know what WM is. It might
not
be
WM Magazine. Check WM Magazine.
Yeah, it must be a check.
Yeah.
WM, yeah. The first pyramid was estimated to have a base of 100 meters and a height of 50 meters. Three pyramids in total were surveyed, with one pyramid showing clear signs of stones worked into a structure close to the surface. A platform with an oblong superstructure of 18 by 9 meters in size was also discovered.
So they were built, well, it kind of reminds me of those Bosnian ones, though. You're saying they were covered over.
Being they're covered, and one thing, another thing talking about covering over pyramids is something China is doing. They're planting trees, vegetation on top of their pyramids so that they aren't excavated. They don't want archaeologists from around the world coming and excavating their pyramids.
The question is, what are they hiding?
Why?
Yeah.
Why did they want...
If it's simply to honor the dead and not want desecration of where the last burial place was, I get that. I understand that.
I don't think it is, though. I think it's just to keep people out of their country.
Full stop.
Yeah.
Foreigners. Dirty foreigners.
Yep.
They're not local people.
Now, this pyramid of Falcon near Nice, France...
Oh.
Falcon. F-A-L-I-C-O-N.
Oh.
Falcon.
Yes, all right.
Felicion. No, Falcon. By Nice, France. Now that thing is crumbling away pretty badly.
Not very nice, is it?
Yeah. And it says, Falcon sits in the hinterland of the prosperous French resort of Nice. Nice has a pyramid. Few people know about it, but it absolutely exists near Falcon to the north of Nice.
Speleologs.
Does that mean that they're pyramid hunters?
I don't know.
That's interesting.
That's a neat word.
New word. Notice a pyramid that marks the entrance to the Radapetnyata cave.
Yeah.
Mystics think it's mystic, but it is.
Well, they would, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Like bell ringers, I think they were bells.
But it is above all enigmatic. Excerpt 1. The Falcon Pyramid is an ancient monument located at a rural site near the town of Falcon on the French Riviera near Nice. It is constructed above the karstic cave known as the Cave of the Bats. Lovely.
Mm.
I'm not going to try to pronounce it in the octagon.
What, you mean the Baum is the Rafa?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it is one of the few pyramids in Europe. The pyramid is constructed in a small, irregularly shaped stone, possesses a fairly acute angle of inclination, and is partially ruined condition. While most of its upper section is missing, the lower section is reasonably well preserved.
Yeah, from the picture here over at thelivingmoon.com, you can kind of get the idea, but that's all. No idea what was at the top or what kind of, you know,
no.
temple or ice cream sales were.
And you can see from the picture, the second picture, where it shows it from the top down, that it was not hollow in the inside.
Okay, yeah.
And you see the rubble in the inside there?
You don't think the rubble came from the top, do you? Collapsed into it?
Maybe it collapsed into it. Maybe it's just another pile of farmer stones. You know, that's just one thing I was thinking. It's interesting how the rubble on the inside is a different color than the rocks
on picture,
the outside.
Yeah. It's a shame that that's in that decomposed state.
Says the pyramid's purpose and origins are unknown, although it has been suggested that it may have been constructed by Roman legionnaires involved in Egyptian cult practices. The number of stairs leading to the cave below the pyramid is, there's a cave below.
Ah.
It also supposedly corresponds to the seven-level initiation rituals of the cult of Mithras, an Eastern religion that was popular with members of the Roman army during the later empire. And Mithras, I believe, had to do with...
You know, it's funny because I don't know, but whether it's through teaching at school or whatever, but you kind of think, I used to think, Romans would go along with Catholicism, and that's all they knew. And they kind of were all the same, you know?
Uh-huh.
You take a Roman soldier, another Roman soldier, it's the same guy. You don't really think of these cults and things going off in different religions.
Oh, my gosh.
Practice.
Well, you think about, like, how the Christians had to go into the ossuaries, the catacombs,
uh-huh,
to do their religious practices because they were outlawed in Rome.
Well, that's the point, isn't
it? For a period.
Some Romans might turn up, catch these Christians there and say, oh, hello, is there an entrance fee? I want to do this too.
Yeah.
They may have been of the same thinking.
But usually they threw the Christians to the lions.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say we get to the North American pyramids?
Yeah, sure, because these are all very interesting. And the point, I guess, also is that many people say, well, look at the way all these pyramids turned up all around the world. But when you look at those different constructions, I'm seeing a different way of building that is similar. You know, much like wheel designs. Everyone's using wheels, but wait, you know, some are made of metal, some are made of stone, some are made of whatever. You know, is it that it went around the world, or did people discover the best way of building? And as I say, some other kind of structures might not even be around anymore. You know, people made a lot of.
Yeah.
It's just
yeah.
that the pyramids lasted longer.
I think, like, the Bosnian pyramid is an example of that,
uh-huh,
where people are just discovering that this hill, this mountain, was actually a pyramid that was larger than the Great Pyramids in Egypt and older.
Yeah, what's with making things really, really massive?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't understand that. And how did they move those stones? We talked about that in one of our first
yeah.
shows. Was how did they get these massive tons of stones?
Even the blue stones of Stonehenge.
Yeah. All the way from Wales, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
South Wales.
Well, if we go to pyramidsinamerica.com, they have a nice map of where pyramids can be found in North America. And not only pyramids, but pyramid mounds and mummies.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Place where they have mummies.
Hang on, they're nearly all on the right-hand side of the country.
Yep. Up along, if you'll notice, up along the Mississippi River Valley and all the way up to Roseau, Minnesota,
mm-hmm,
where on the Canadian border there.
What's with this right-hand side map? I mean, what happened on the left of the country? I'm very ignorant on it all. But
what I think happened, Mark, was that the eastern side of the country was settled by those that came up from Mexico, and they traded with the people along the lower Mississippi Valley.
Ah, okay.
And that may be where they got the idea to build these pyramids. And that went up along, of course, they're going to follow the Mississippi River Valley and they're going to build their pyramids up along there.
That makes the map start to make more sense, doesn't it?
Then you go over to the right along the Ohio River Valley, and you don't really see a whole lot. You see a few over in the Missouri River Valley, which is up there in North Dakota, South Dakota, and Nebraska. And when you look to the left of that, what you have is plains. There isn't a lot of
No, Kansas has been left completely alone there.
Yeah. There isn't the animal herds will stay where there's water, right?
Yeah.
They hadn't grown maize yet in North America at the time.
Interesting point.
And so they weren't really cultivating crops
uh-huh.
at that time in that area. And if you look at even farther west by the mountains here is where it was drier.
You know,
that's what the brown indicates.
What's that name of that friend of yours with the videos that does the research in North America? What was his name? You mentioned him earlier in the show.
Scott Walter.
Scott Walter.
He's not a friend of mine, but...
Well, a friend in terms of you wanting to see his videos.
Yes.
I'd like him to do some research on things that popped up on the west and the east coast sides of America.
Yep.
at the same time.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Yes. Because West Coast was also settled by people coming up from Mexico, but also coming down from Canada. And that's where you got the settlements up there in Washington. Yeah. And for our friends in Great Britain, Washington is the farthest top left state of the United States. And let's see, what can we say? Where you see the most of the pyramid buildings in the middle of the country or just to the right of the middle country, that is the Mississippi River Basin that I was talking about. And unfortunately, like I said, there's that place in the top of corner of Nebraska that probably was on the Missouri River Basin and into South Dakota and North Dakota. And that's right in the middle of the country, in the top. Minnesota is the one with the pointy thing at the top of the state in the very middle of the country.
I know. Do you think that was a drinking game one time?
What's that?
You know, they bet. Somebody bet somebody in Canada that, well, if I win this, you know, I don't want your car, I don't want your wife, I want that bit of land there.
That one, yeah.
That explains the shape otherwise.
The northeast angle?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, Chris, I think the northeast angle should belong to Canada. There, you can have it. No, and I think that's the reason why you will find more mummies over in the western part, because it was warmer and drier.
Do those mummies share any traits with the Egyptian ones? Were they wrapped? Did they have?
I think they were found like they were in South America, where they were sitting, holding their knees with their arms.
Oh, so it was the way that the air was, the preservation, the land itself,
right,
caused the preservation to mummification,
right,
rather than wrapping them up in bandages.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep. But what's interesting is we have to remember that place in the Grand Canyon.
Ooh,
that
has
the cave that has the ancient Egyptian,
reportedly so,
artifacts. Mm. Yeah, reportedly so.
A fascinating study in its own self in the 1800s, mm-hmm, when they were finding all Egyptian stuff in the cave. Whether it's right or not, we don't know.
And also for our people in Britain, if you look at this map of America and you see this Lake Michigan hanging down there, and right above it is a gigantic copper mines red dot, that's where I was talking about, where the Phoenicians took millions of tons of copper out of the mines there, and they believe that they traveled up the St. Lawrence Seaway, which is the border of North America to the north and to the east. And came out and...
Hang on, did they float this copper over to other places?
Went across the Atlantic.
They'd have to be pretty sturdy boats.
They had huge... The thing is, too, is you have to remember that Niagara Falls is on this waterway. How did they get...
They didn't make it easy for themselves, did they?
Yeah, how did they get around that? So there's another idea, is that they came up... excuse me. They came up the Mississippi River Valley and followed the Ohio River and up into the St. Lawrence Seaway.
Okay.
That way. So there's down, if you go below the picture of the map,
okay,
you see pyramids north of Atlanta.
Oh, yeah, with flat tops.
And a pyramid near Natchez, Mississippi.
Missouri.
Mississippi.
Is it?
Yeah.
Sorry,
Missouri,
I do apologize.
Missouri is M.O.
Sorry, it is indeed.
That's okay.
Trying to correct an American that's been here all their life.
Yeah.
See, I'm not becoming American, is that all, am I?
No.
I can get it completely wrong with,
no,
you know, with ease.
No. A lot of Illinois is famous for a lot of pyramids. In fact, they have an area in the southeast corner of the state that's called Little Egypt because of the pyramids and caves there that have Egyptian artifacts.
Really?
Yep.
Are they in the Smithsonian and stuff now to have a look at?
I don't know. You would probably think so. I think they've either been looted or they are in the Smithsonian, which pretty much comes out to be the same thing. Because the Smithsonian hides some stuff, doesn't it?
Oh, like giants and things.
Yes. Yes. Well, I think that's about it for our show today. I do have a lot of links that you can look at. I hope you found it interesting. And we'll get done here before Simon starts yelling at us. One last shout-out to the room. We got Byte Radio Me. That's Robert. Well, Kathy's Distant Echoes is me for today. And Kathy B is really her. And we got Curious Times Chris. We've got guest 1443 and guest 1450. Thank you for stopping by the show. We got Linz, Rihanna, and Simon, all from Great Britain, all from South Britain, I believe, Southern Britain, Southern England, anyway. And Slider, who is from Northeastern England.
Northwestern,
I'm
sorry.
In
Manchester, originally.
Here's me.
Without building pyramids there, though, I might add.
Here's me, an American, trying to tell an Englishman where he's from. Oh, let me find us a song, shall we? Here's one that I love this song. And that's it from him?
And that's it from her.
Have a great day.
As you brush your shoes, you stand before your mirror. And you comb your hair, grab your coat.
Come on out.